on this 21st day of July 2018, you have found me in my favorite place. With Me is played by some of the greatest of jazz in the history of African American music. That little song, not really, because in Black Lives and When Their Religion Matters, you know that when you heard that song, that either somebody had passed away or somebody needed to get close to God. As a matter of fact, they tell me that in 1906, when that ship, the Titanic, sunk, the people that were on lifeboats that escaped said that the band was playing Abide With Me as the ship went under. These facts bring me to another question. When we think about the little things that happen in our lives, and we usually allow that little thing to explode into something larger, don't we? And the explosion and or the effects of it or the fallout of it is what we allow to tear us up. I found more manuscripts of mine when I was in college, and I'm thinking about that because I'm reading the manuscripts of another man that was a little younger than I was at the time when I went to college, but he's experiencing the same things that I did. He's thinking through everything, and you know, that's a good quality of life when you find a male that can think through everything. And then as he floods his mind with theology, philosophy, humanities, science, technology, when he does that, he uniquely understands the world that he lives in. Are you that way, and do you come across that way when you speak to every person that comes into your contact with? Can it really be said that you have that kind of transparency with them and that you can benefit their entire lives? That's what this webcast is going to be about. We're not going to name call. We're not going to... And you know what? Hasn't the Christian church heard enough of that? How about this? Transparency and honesty. One person towards another. Now let's look back. How do we solve some of these conflicts? Okay, you just heard Thelonious Monk play Abide With Me. We're going to hear some more jazz while I want you to think of this, while I want you to think of the answer to this question. Because I think, quiet is kept, I'm telling you, I think that it is just the excellent question to ask. So, when we come back, I want to go over that question again and see what you think about it. And how am I going to know what you're thinking about it? No, you can't call in the way I used to, but you're going to think about it. And I'm going to know by seeing how many of you came to my website and listened to this particular webcast. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to set up a nice number here by I want to play a number entitled Ruby My Dear, as played by Thelonious Monk. Let's listen. Coleman Hawkins on that tenor sax. Thelonious Monk on the piano. Listen to Thelonious on the keyboard. Yeah. Thank you, Thelonious Monk. Wow. What a number from a nice CD. Nice Monk's Music. And got him riding around in a little red wagon in his little often wore tam. That was Ruby, my dear. Now, you hear John Coltrane's rendition of that? Oh! And it doesn't tell me who wrote it. But I'm under the impression that John Coltrane did. But I can't prove it. Okay, because the album cover doesn't say that. Let's go and see what some of what I said back in my college days, when I went to college, because I think that I've already answered the question. Some of you have answered it in your hearts. Now, test me. Let me see if everything is right. Love is a very important matter. Okay, I agree with that. I'm not going to read the whole article. I'm hop, skipping, and jumping through this. It says that the definition of this term can consume our reactions. This enlightenment, this massive emotion, which arouses extreme emotions within humankind. Yes, that's what I said. I said love is what we call it. Love with all of its pros and cons. We are here about, and listen, we hear it about it in all of our love songs I have in the paper. Love is a mini splinter thing. Or love makes my world go round. Or you put this love in my heart. Keith Green. We're foolish to think that we can live without it. Though a lot of people on this globe today, these are just my words added in here because I wrote this back in the 80s. So I'm just using it as an outline for the discourse tonight. That's how complete my outlines are. If I talk about this situation and bring it about today, listen, why don't we love the families of the people that was lost in the little boat accident in Missouri. Here we got almost an entire family, a black family that was down there. And the lady named Coleman, she could be a relative of mine, saying, I just want to die. And my heart went out to her. That's the way love is. I felt her pain. I felt it. Though none of my children drowned in that water, I felt it. That is the kind of love that's supposed to come from every individual that says that they love God. It doesn't matter about the church you belong to or how much money you gave to it or how high you think you are on society's social ladder. Oh, go ahead and get that master's degree. Get that double PhD. Let the boss give you that break, that raise, that opening that you never thought that you'd get. Forget all of your friends that you grew up with. Don't talk with those guys that aren't doing what you're doing. They only pull you down. Follow that crowd if you want to. But don't tell me you love. Because once you tell me you love and you do that, and you do that to someone, you should be ashamed of yourself. In this paper, what the professor must have asked me is to break down this thing on love. So let me share with you what I wrote down for agape. Okay, this term denotes the highest form of human love which can be experienced. Now, I'm going to tell you, first, this agape love has to come from God to us. Because just arbitrarily, this love, agape, for some reason, I think that there's something else that went haywire with our human nature that messed us up. I continue to type. It says, this holds the meaning of eternal love. This agape love, which is perfect, the type which a supreme God would have toward men. This love is contrasted with all other forms of love that men can experience, quote unquote. I think that, man, that is amazing. I wrote this way back in when I was, I don't know, this could have been, let me see what professor wrote on this. Because if the professor left his John Hancock on there, I see red ink through there. But I don't have the last sheet and the first sheet. I don't need it. Just let me read my comments and concentrate on that. And I think that the document is important because you're listening to me in 2018. This was done between 1986 and 1990. Okay? Somewhere in there. All right. So I like that definition. If you want to hear it back, I want to say this love is of a nature that is only asked for the benefit of the other person and nothing for itself. Now you hear that. This love, or the nature of this love, is that it only asks for the benefit of the other person. In other words, love between human beings. And if you truly love that other human being, you are benefiting that other human being, whatever it takes for you. You don't need a Bible to show you how to do that. You know that individual walking on the concrete needs a pair of shoes. You got 14 pair, and you only wear one because the other one's out of style. Why don't you give him a pair of shoes every 2 months? That's the way you show you love a person. Let me read it again. Love is of a nature that it only asks for the benefit of the other person and nothing for itself. Nothing for itself. Nothing for itself. See, the pastor has to get that in his head. Here you got these jokers asking everything for themselves, and you're sitting there, don't even know how to define what love is, and you're going to have the audacity to question why I do what I do on this webcast. Don't you know what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to bust through that hard head of yours because you have been brainwashed. I see some of these youngsters on YouTube trying to get through to you. They'll cuss you and your mama out. I'm not going to stoop that low. I feel sorry for you. You're still following that trick game. If I bet you anything, I bet you that you know more and enough. Listen to me. And try not to listen to the naysayers that would tell you that Pastor John has lost his way. I haven't lost my way at all. It does not matter what the naysayers may imply. You know what true love is. Now, as I continue to read this essay, and I'm finding it to be a very interesting part of my early life. Wow, this is great. You guys want to know what's amazing about doing these webcasts? Is that I don't know how to lie to you. Now, let me give you the second definition that I had on the paper. Of love is Eros, E-R-O-S. I wrote, in the early Greek mythology, this was the god of love, or sex. Now, you see, you have to be very careful, because here you have a word Eros, which can mean love, or it can mean sex. Now, you've heard it said, I've heard it said, that having sex is bad, that you shouldn't have it. Every human being, I don't know how to put this, I think that every human being knows what having sex is. Now, whether it's inordinate, whether it's debauched, we also know that. We know whether it is pleasurable. We as humans love that pleasure. Now, what our faith, our religion has done is put certain taboos on certain things that we do. I was having a discussion with someone, and he says, where does the guilt come from? I said, the guilt comes from you doing what you know you ought not do. But when you continue to persevere to do those things, there's a resultant of that, and it deals with your conscience. That's where guilt comes in. That's where Origen's definition of sin, and this is a little before 300 B.C., something like that, A.D. that is, the lack of conformity to the revealed will of God and the refusal of the creature to be related to his creator by faith. Interesting, last night I went to a I guess it was a movie screening of a movie, and sitting down having a conversation with a younger man, and a man maybe a little younger than myself, and we were talking about the difference between love and passion, and he was trying to say that we as human creatures, you know, they try to bring it on down into the psychological banter of it. I was spreading an idea that no one should enter into a relationship with anyone unless that person knows that this person is extremely in love with them and has nothing but the best for them in the future. That this is what they ought to look forward to in a relationship with the person that they're with. And the other man disagreed. He said the people change, they're like the weather. They have different definitions of love, and I was saying, that's why I was telling the young man here, it's best for them to find out exactly what defined as love is, because if not, then it's going to be a kind of a situation where you can make it be whatever you want it to be. Love can be whatever you contrive it to be, you know. And of course, he and I disagreed, but we were intelligent enough to know that at this affair that we were attending, that we were both guests, just having a talk at a little party, a movie showing. But I saw that the young man was under the influence of the humanistic approach. When the man tried to say that this idea about God and what makes you feel guilty and the rest should all be cast aside, I immediately, I guess, jumped on the defense and said that I've always had a personal view in God to direct me morally. And I said, without this view, I would be shipwrecked. I'd be doing whatever I wanted to do, and to justify it with flimsy excuses like that. I also shared with the person that I was an apologist for years, a pastor of a church for years, and somewhat of an adjunct college professor teaching philosophy. I didn't just come on the scene. I've been thinking my whole life. And when I hear him in one swoop just wipe away God and everything in it, I found it to be quite disturbing, very disturbing, as a matter of fact. One would say that love is a little bit like this next Thelonious Monk piece, and I think it's one of the defining pieces that defines Thelonious in the way he plays his piano. That's Harcourt in the background. And I see why my neighbors are walking. They have a, what do you call those big dogs? Huge dogs. A husky. No, it's larger than that. The kind that carries a bottle of bourbon around their neck. The white and the brown one. But my neighbors have a huge one, and they walk him in. Little Harcourt just goes banana fruitcakes on this morning. Off Minor is the name of this number. Enjoy. John Coltrane, what am I talking about? Thelonious Monk on the piano. I was thinking about Coltrane. I was reading something on Facebook. Off Minor is the name of that. And if you really want to play Thelonious, you've got to really play that. Let's go back to the love thing and the sex thing. Go back to this article that I was reading. I find interesting. Eros is also a binding to the other person. If the other person did not want anything to do with the person that loved them. In other words, you're trying to get with the person and the person doesn't want you to get with them, that would be eros, because you're trying to take something that's not given freely. This is not the type of love that others seek in a true relationship. Because in this particular aspect of it called eros, it can only be defined as a type of pleasurable experience which leads to further and deeper sensual experience. So this eros is where we gain the meaning of the erotic. Again, there are those who lives for this type of love alone. They just want eros alone. They just want to be stimulated in that way. And then I wrote that it's my understanding that these types of people live for the moment and not for the future. For the person for which their affection changes, this love relationship becomes strange. Reason enough, our society. Reasons enough. Oh, there's reason enough. I had to edit my own writing. There's reason enough within our society to understand the high divorce rate. Eros does not help. And I'd like to add something else to it. Eros drives you to fulfill these passions, these desires. All right, moving on down. How did I answer this? How did I define philia or phileo? All right, this other aspect of love. It says there's a kind of love that most of us have deeply for each other. This love is not threatening. I would call this safe love. I call phileo safe love. The kind of love that can be observed or not defined at all. This is the kind of love that men have for men and don't have to worry about being over-affectionate. Phileo, when you hug a cousin, you're good to see an uncle or nephew that you haven't seen in a while. It's the kind of love that women can have and can become close to and rely on each other in a platonic social relationship. Phileia denotes a personal affection and fondness. It holds the meaning of a force which attracts one to the other. The force could be something held in common, such as the color of skin, the religion that one believes in, the family ties that bind people together, rather than a force which repels. This type of love draws. Its adherence tightly. It just draws them tightly into a personal bond. This type of love is only defined within the context of the relationship itself. Those on the outside may view this relationship as abnormal, especially if they have not experienced phileia for themselves. That's good. That's good. I wrote that back in the day. I still believe that. We're therefore left with the task of defining what we mean by love when we use the term. We must be aware of the term that we're using when we use the word. There comes a great responsibility on our part to define what we mean by what we say. Many within our society will not take the time to prove what they mean, thereby causing confusion when the wrong use of the term establishes itself by the way we act towards a person that we say we love. I would not go so far to say that a person does not love another person if they do not display attitudes in the same way that I do. One must keep within the context of the framework of the person's world view what love means to that lone individual. So we're left where we began, with a dilemma. I write, I said there is a conflict of understanding, reasoning, or purpose when defining such a broad statement as that which means love to another person. There lived a great poet, Paul Laurence Dunbar. He was one of my favorites then. He is now. And he wrote of love years ago, one of the most meaningful phrases, which reminds me to this day, is from one of his many poems on love called Love's Phases. This is the last stanza of the poem, and I hope that I read it correctly to you. Love hath the voice of a storm at night, wildly defiant. Hear him yield up your soul to his might. Tenderly plight. None shall regret him who heed him aright. Love hath the voice of a storm at night. Then I wrote, we need this love in all of its uniqueness. We crave the closeness, the manners of the warmness, the comfortable human expression of companionship which we gather for, which we gather from day to day, year to year. We need love. All of us requires its fanciful fruits, which offer the knowledge of knowing that we too matter. I'm closing. Show me a person that is not loved, and I shall show you a person on his or her way out of this life. Now, I find that to be true, because if you can't find that love, you're going to die and you're going to leave this. There must be this love offered to all. There's no discrimination with love. It must have its perfect way. And indeed, it should. There are those who might display a negative resentment towards those of us who can offer without effort this love. And that's what the problem was in this party that I attended the other night, because the person was saying that, oh, it's just a group of emotions put together that changes constantly, and there is no lasting love. Well, I don't believe that. I told him, I said, I perform me a marriage. Either I'm a fool, an idiot, and I was with the woman that I was with for 35 years. There had to be some love there. You just don't stay with a person all that time unless there is some love. You don't stay there. And then the man tried to say the marriage is, and I agree with him, marriage now today is nothing but a financial contract, a business deal that two people may make together to justify themselves. But we must love them also, for they have the greatest need of this unique gift, that is, everyone around us, towards those around us. I long for a world of true agape love. For this is indeed the love that causes humankind to proceed on with the cause of our kind. For you see, we are a unique species. Within our hearts dwells the fullest capacity to love, to hate, to regret, to confer, to associate, annihilate, agitate, and so forth. We can love without inhibition. Will we as a people do that? That is the lasting test of all time. And I don't know what my professor gave me for this paper, but I wrote it way back in the 80s sometime. Wow. And here I am today, still discussing this wonderful, wonderful subject matter of love. Well, I'm going to play one more cut, and it will be a portion of the 10 minutes and 45 seconds. Epistrophe, since we want to think a little theological. What is epistrophe? I think I'll read this from the album cover, if it has something on here to explain, because Thelonious Press. Excuse me. Dropping CD cases all over the place. Thelonious was an interesting man. Interesting man. This was his septet. Let me see if they... No, I don't think it has anything in here about this particular number. Let me see. Plus, the print is too small for me. I need my magnifying glass when I do this. Well, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm just going to play it. And when you hear it, you're going to know that it is a great number. Here it is. To my website, as I use Thelonious Monk. Nice little album. Monk's Music, Thelonious Monk Septet, with Coleman Hawkins, Art Blakey, and Geeky Grace. I'm telling you, Monk was so cool. And it's cool of you to come by my site. I'll spend more time next time and have As a matter of fact, I found a great little study I'd like to bring with you after all these years out of my library. After I'm going through my stacks, and I think you'd appreciate my take on it. May do that next time. God bless. You know the word. You know the drill. Stand to the word. Don't let the humanist move you away from that which you know is right. If you know God has done something in your life and doing something, not as some crazy metaphysical person out of his mind, but someone that is thinking logically, and not just thinking defensively, but organically about your relationship with God. Let's put it that way. I am so in tune with God that I am in tune with His will for my life. That's what I'm talking about. I'm in tune for His will for my life. That's love. He causes me to love other people unconditionally. I'm trying to get to the point where I can love without judging anyone. And that no one should judge me wrongfully. But it's so difficult to do that because what we do is we pledge allegiances to those whom we feel more comfortable around. And we choose to cast aside those that we don't have that very familiar tendency to grow with. Okay? See, I'm still talking. I'm going to let you go. Let me go. Bye.